Simon & Schuster Audio presents Every Star a Song, Ascendant Series Book 2, written by Jay Posey and read by Laurel Lefko.
Chapter 1. Elith felt the warning, a sudden sharpening of her senses before its cause formed in her conscious mind. A few moments later, out of the corner of her eye, she caught the man glancing her way for 2 seconds too long, and her heart sank. It wasn't the first time they'd tracked her down, but there'd been no sign of them for so long, she'd almost begun to believe she'd escaped at last. With that man's glance, all such hope vanished. The consequences would be violent. She took a sip of her strongly spiced and mildly alcoholic tea, placed the cup back on the small table in front of her smoothly, casually. No need to alert the man that she'd marked him. Not until she'd identified his friends. And she knew he would have friends. At first, Elith kept her eyes slightly lowered, centered on the steam swirling and tumbling up from her drink while she allowed her vision to expand out, to take in the wide energy of the common room. Then she let her attention drift and made note of where instinct drew it. The place was a 2-story affair, half bar, half restaurant, with the upper section open and overlooking the main floor below, where she now sat. It was about 3/4 full. Patrons stood in clumps near the bar or sat in close groups around other tables. Elith sat back in her chair and swept her gaze in a lazy arc around the restaurant and then back again, careful not to let her eyes rest even for a moment on anyone in particular. But now that she'd spotted one of her hunters, the others gradually became apparent. A man and a woman feigning intimate conversation at a corner table by the entrance. A lone woman lingering over a tall mug of a once hot beverage that no longer steamed. Above, in the upper section, a pair of men arguing animatedly in friendly debate. Hezra agents, all. It had been over 3 years since her self-inflicted exile from the first house of the Ascendants, since the protection of that great house had been withdrawn. The Hezra had been after her from the first day. And though Elith knew they would never truly abandon their search, she'd been on world almost long enough to begin to hope that maybe she'd at last found a place far enough out of the way where she could live the quiet life she'd envisioned for herself. But the Hezra's reach was as long as the galaxy itself. And now she was a hair's breadth from their grasp. Worse still, Elith knew what the appearance of these agents portended. This was no brief moment of crisis. It was only the opening salvo in what would be weeks, if not months, of relentless pursuit. Once more, she would be forced to burn her world to the ground in yet another attempt to disappear and reemerge on some other planet with another name and another life. Her coat hung on the back of her chair. At her feet sat the small pack she kept with her at all times, containing the few personal belongings she'd taken when she'd left the house. Most important among them, her journal of the work she'd performed in its service, and the vials of earth she'd saved from each world she'd killed. And now, the only possessions that would leave the planet with her. It had become a cycle, birthed on the planet Quell, now destined, it seemed, to echo through the cosmos. Since then, all she'd wanted was time and space to reconcile what she had been raised to believe with what she had witnessed, and indeed participated in, on that world, by the side of the man she'd called Grief. Sacrificing her status in the house, giving up all she'd been and ever could be in that seat of power should have been penance enough, but it seemed that the Ascendant's authorities would never forget, nor forgive her, for Quell. They'd stationed 6 inside, 2 at the front entrance, 1 each near the side and rear exits, 2 on overwatch from above. If they'd risked putting that many of their own in such close proximity to her, it was a sign that they weren't likely to try to kill her outright. They could have done that from a much safer distance. Another capture attempt, then. Small comfort. Elith carefully replayed what she'd observed of the agents since her arrival nearly an hour before. The relentless training of her former life had made the practice of tracking the people around her automatic. 5 of them she could recall seeing enter. But the 6th, the woman by the side entrance, had already been at the table when Elith first came in. They'd gotten here ahead of her. Either they were getting better, or she'd allowed herself to become predictable. Undoubtedly, the rest of the team was already positioned outside, waiting for their moment. But what moment? Elith glanced around again. There were maybe 60 or so others in the establishment. Too many witnesses, too much potential for collateral damage. The settlement was large enough to hide in, but still small enough for news to travel fast. If they didn't want too many questions being asked, it was a safe bet they wouldn't make their move until she was outside. Unless she forced their hand. Elith took a long drink of her tea while she surveyed her mental map of the surrounding area, the buildings, the avenues, the alleys. Any escape route she identified, she had to assume they had as well. Though the agents were uncomfortably close, it was their containment strategy that posed the biggest threat. Beyond those in the restaurant, she had to anticipate a tight perimeter around the establishment, and a second, looser cordon beyond that. Would they have a third? Undoubtedly. The rings they'd formed around her might extend all the way to orbit. Twice before, she had narrowly escaped their capture. The cost of doing so again seemed almost more than she could bear. For a moment, her last sight of Eth Amuin flashed in her memory, his gentle acceptance of the rough hands that had seized him, the quick grin he'd given her as they dragged him away, as though it was all the consequence of some small mischief, or perhaps just the beginning of a prank he'd planned all along. He'd allowed himself to be taken. Elith hadn't been able to fathom why. Until now. He must have known the toll it took to live hunted. Maybe his had been the wiser choice. Even if immediate escape was possible, this latest attempt all but proved Elith would never experience the true freedom she thought she'd purchased with her exile, unless she could persuade the Hezra to give up their obsession with her. Her hope of such was slight beyond measure. The outcome of any attempt to negotiate seemed all but inevitable. But Eth Amuin had taught her the value of being open to the great impact often hidden in small probabilities. Unfortunately, she had no means to communicate directly with the Hezra, except perhaps the agents in the room. To escape, she first needed to disrupt them, paralyze them just long enough to seize the initiative. To send a message, she needed them to be willing to suspend action long enough to hear what she had to say. Maybe there was a way to do both at the same time. Elith stood, gathered her things, picked up her tea, and carried them all with her toward the lone woman watching the side entrance. As she approached, the woman kept her eyes studiously on the round table in front of her, seemingly lost in thought. "Excuse me," Elith said, stopping at the table. The woman glanced up, her expression placid, tinged with the suspicion one might expect from someone approached by a stranger. The signs of surprise and anxiety were apparent to Elith's acute eye, but well controlled. The woman was truly a skilled professional. "I'm sorry to bother you," Elith continued. "Would you mind if I sat with you for a few minutes?"
"Not really looking for company," the woman replied.
"Me neither," Elith said, "and a guy over there's been giving me weird looks all night."
"Yeah? Which guy?"
Back over there? Elith said, bobbing her head discreetly toward the first Hezra agent she'd spotted. Dark hair, beard, brown coat. The woman flicked her eyes toward the man. Her partner. A critical moment. She would suspect she'd been made, but would she let the situation play out to see where it led? Elith readied, in case the woman made a move.
Oh, yeah, him, the woman said. Why do you think I'm sitting all the way over here?
She pushed the chair opposite her out with her foot. Elith nodded, gave a quick bow, and touched her heart in casual greeting.
I'm Evani, Elith said. Evani, the woman repeated. Beryl.
She dipped her head and tapped her heart in the bare minimum of greeting that could pass for manners. Elith pulled the chair around to the side of the table, closer to Beryl, and angled so she could keep an eye on the common room and the exit. She sat down, and just like that, removed one link in their chain of communication and took a casual hostage. In doing so, she knew she was pushing the Hezra team into high alert. The woman, Beryl, might not be able to report directly on Elith's movement, but undoubtedly her channel was open to the other Hezra operatives. Elith had been under their observation before. Now she knew every eye and ear was intensely focused on her every motion and word. The trick would be to stretch the uncertainty of the moment out, to keep them off balance as long as possible without tipping them into action. Thank you, Beryl, she said. She sat calmly, her expression pleasantly neutral. At first, she didn't initiate conversation, just watched Beryl with an expectant openness. The posture put the other woman in an awkward gap of silence, where Elith could observe how quickly she could process the situation and respond. After a few moments, Elith gestured to a nearby attendant, and then to Beryl's mug, now only a third full and probably room temperature. Beryl shook her head, but the attendant had already disappeared. Least I can do to show my gratitude, Elith said.
It's really not necessary, Beryl answered. I've never minded helping a sister in a time of need.
Courtesy deserves to be repaid, Elith said. And I carry no debts. Beryl twitched a smirk.
None at all? I'm all paid up. Must be nice.
The two women sat in quiet showdown for a moment, Elith watching as Beryl scrambled to find her footing in the face-off. The contrast between Beryl's calm expression and the tension pouring from her impressed Elith. The attendant briefly broke the silent standoff as he returned with a fresh mug, this one steaming, and placed it in front of Beryl with a quick bow. After he departed, Beryl lifted the mug to Elith, dipped her head in thanks, and took a sip of her drink. Elith noted the way she held the mug, grasping the narrow handle with two fingers rather than hooking it with her thumb the way the locals did. New to town? Elith asked. Beryl's eyebrow raised involuntarily, though whether her surprise was due to the fact that Elith had noticed or had dared to ask wasn't clear. She hesitated a moment, trying to decide whether to stick with her cover story or admit the truth.
That obvious, huh? She said, after the hitch.
Local attire, Elith said with a quick smile, but not custom. It's always the little details that take the longest. Beryl flashed a thin smile of her own. Elith read in her expression the working of her mind as she tried to discern Elith's intent.
Recent arrival, actually, Beryl said. About 3 standard weeks, I think. Seems like longer. But I hate to look like a tourist.
You do better than most.
This your home world, then?
Beryl asked, gently testing the situation.
No, I've only been here a few months, Elith said, but I'd like to stay.
The people are good, cordial, not overly interested in your business. Beryl's eyes narrowed slightly, sensing how Elith was steering the conversation.
Spoken like someone with a past, she replied.
Everyone's got a past. some more than others. I've just been looking for a place to settle down, Elith said. Somewhere I could keep to myself, be left alone. I'm doing everything I can to lead a quiet life. The last traces of doubt melted from Beryl's demeanor. She understood the game now, understood that Elith was negotiating with her and with the Hezra at large. Consequence is hard to outrun, Beryl said. Not when it's already run its course, and when no one's seeking to drive it beyond its natural limits.
Well, that is the trouble, isn't it? Those who cause harm usually want to forget, while those who suffer it tend to remember.
Revenge rarely works out.
Justice usually does, Beryl answered, eventually.
It's important to know for certain which one you're looking for.
You might believe your debts are paid, but some of us answer to a higher authority.
We all do, whether we care to acknowledge it or not, Elith said. But authority and wisdom are two different things.
It would be wise to submit to both. Elith bowed her head. Beside her, Beryl tensed further, undoubtedly well briefed on Elith's physical prowess and fearful of what she could do with her voice. Elith was almost out of time.
I'm no threat to either. I'm a woman of peace, content in obscurity, she said quietly, and then looked back to Beryl. And I don't want to hurt anyone.
Then maybe you should go out the side door instead of the front. Elith knew that exit led to a narrow alley that filtered into a small courtyard between several of the buildings, isolated from the main traffic of locals. The two women stared into each other's eyes for a hard moment, and Elith saw the granite resolve that the Hezra had forged within Beryl. They would never let her go, even if the pursuit destroyed them. Elith's hope for a different outcome had been vanishingly small to begin with, but at least she'd honored the chance. She spread her hands open before her, where Beryl could see them, and slowly rose from her chair. Well, Beryl, she said as she put on her coat, thank you for the company. Good luck.
With what?
With whatever happens when I walk out this door.
Beryl smirked.
If it's any consolation, if it were up to me, you'd already be dead.
Elith picked up her small pack and slung it over her shoulder. As she turned to go, Beryl raised her mug and dipped her head in salute.
See you soon, Elith.
Elith looked Beryl in the eye.
Probably not.
She crossed the few steps to the side door with even stride, not knowing how many agents would be waiting for her when she opened it. 10? Or 1,000? It would make no real difference. The outcome would be the same. In the 3 years since her exile from the first house of the Ascendants, Elith had carefully investigated new avenues of the deep language and its power to influence time and space. Though Eth Amuin had opened her eyes to a multitude of possibilities, her long years of training had seared within her the inherent risks of tampering with the fabric of the cosmos. Still, she had found techniques hidden within techniques, secrets masked, or perhaps forgotten, connections implied by the gaps between house teachings. 3 years of exile had only grown her understanding and her willingness to act. She drew in her breath, long, steady, and cleared her mind of all but one image. And in her exhale, she formed quiet words in the deep language. Lightning seeks its course. Elith paired the words with a hand gesture of her own devising, amplifying the fullness of the words. As she reached out and opened the door, the power of the deep language took effect, multiplying the breadth, depth, and quickness of her perception. It wasn't that time slowed for her exactly. Rather, her senses opened and unified with new dimensions of clarity, sight, sound, touch, all joining together in a single experience that could be processed faster and more completely. From an outside perspective, her ability to see the Hezra's plans unfold and react accordingly would give her finely tuned reflexes the unnerving appearance of supernatural foresight. The narrow alley beyond the door was empty. Elith stepped out and glanced left toward the main street. A light rain had begun to fall. In her altered state, she could perceive the individual drops and the space between them. Heavy foot traffic passed by the mouth of the alleyway, citizens going about their evening routine, oblivious to the coming clash. But she saw no sign of any Hezra agents or troopers. She turned right, followed the side street to the courtyard, the nexus behind several buildings. There she found them waiting, 12 heavy troopers standing in a shallow arc, armed and armored. But in the center of the courtyard, about 20 feet ahead of the others, stood a woman, fully suited in some type of light-powered armor that Elith had never seen before. The suit bore Hezra markings, done in their traditional crimson and black, and though it showed no signs of damage, it nevertheless looked well used. In stark contrast with the taut knot of her companions hunched over their weapons, she stood upright, unmoved by the circumstance, almost casual, a veteran of the most dangerous missions. Their champion. The opaque faceplate was a matte crimson, featureless, implacable. "Exile," the suit said. The mask gave her voice a synthetic, graveled edge. "You are summoned." A strange greeting, coming from the captain of a Hezra grab team. Elith could feel the tension streaming from the others, the fear of what might come next, and of what failure might mean. Or success, for that matter. "You brought an awful lot of friends just to make an invitation," she said. The suit made no reply. "And if I decline?" Elith asked. "Death." The answer came so quickly, so surely, Elith knew it was no bluff. They meant to take her if they could, and kill her if they couldn't. She wondered how they would know when to pull the trigger. "For us both," the suit added. The claim caught Elith off guard. The Hezra didn't punish its own troops for failure, and the weapons carried by the troopers around them didn't seem capable of penetrating the woman's armor. That thought sparked another in her mind, of the lengths they'd been willing to go to before, back on Quell. The contingency. Were they so desperate to stop her now that they would destroy an entire planet rather than see her escape again? In that one moment of thought, the woman crossed the gap with impossible speed, a strike leveled at Elith's throat. It would have ended any other conflict, but to Elith's enhanced mind, the intent of motion signaled its inevitable outcome. She easily parried and sidestepped. But the suit seemed to anticipate the movement and pivoted into a follow-up strike. Elith deflected the attack, reflexively reached to catch the arm, but the armored limb wrenched from her grasp, the motion flowing directly into an elbow strike that narrowly caught Elith on the cheekbone. The power of even that glancing blow tipped Elith's balance to her left. Instinctively, she tucked her arms in to protect her head and body, and not a moment too soon. Another attack impacted her forearm as the suit relentlessly followed through. Elith slipped under another strike, checked the assault with an open palm to the faceplate, and took two quick steps back to create distance. Her heightened awareness enabled her to see the strikes as they developed, yet the woman's attacks seemed almost equally able to predict her own counters. A skilled combatant, far beyond the usual Hezra trooper. And there was nothing Elith could do with her bare hands to damage the woman through that armor. But she wouldn't need to. Already, she'd formed her plan of escape through the line. For a few seconds, Elith allowed the woman to press the attack. As long as it appeared that their champion was winning, the others seemed content to hold their fire. Elith dodged and redirected her foe, feigning a scrambling retreat while carefully guiding the fight toward the arc of troopers around them, near the center of their line. Once they were close enough, Elith would launch the armored woman into the nearest shooters, fold the arc in on itself, and escape in the momentary confusion. She guessed she would have 3, maybe 4 seconds before the troopers would gain a clear shot. Even as the fight continued, she planned her route through the center alleyway, predicting when and where she would face her next encounter. But only a few steps away from where she had expected to spring her ambush, Elith found the exchanges increasingly easier to anticipate. As the fight extended, the woman's combat style became more apparent. And it wasn't typical of a Hezra trooper. It was smoother, more fluid, loops and arcs, rather than the lines and angles of standard Hezra technique. And though the intensity was severe, the energy driving the combat fell into a rhythm that felt strangely familiar. Acutely familiar. Elith suddenly felt she'd fought this opponent before, hundreds of times, over many years. Impossible. But even as her mind tried to reject the concept, her body moved to test the theory. When an opening appeared, she feinted a high-line attack toward her foe's face that she'd used too often against her longtime sparring partner, and the reflexive counter she expected began to unfold, as she knew in her heart it would. As it did, she slipped low, sweeping a leg behind her opponent and unleashing all her might in a powerful open palm strike to the woman's solar plexus. The suit absorbed the impact easily, but it could do nothing against gravity. The woman tumbled backward with a startled cry, made unearthly through the mask, scattered the two closest shooters, and impacted heavily on her back. Elith's scant window presented itself, her half-moment to escape, if she seized it. Instead, she stood paralyzed. "Nieda?" she said. The woman in the suit sat up quickly, but did not regain her feet, and though the faceplate had not changed, Elith knew the expression behind it just as surely as she knew her own reflection. Her training partner, her sister in arms, and now apparently traitor to the house. The shock coursed through Elith, but before it could fully manifest, a hard blow struck her from behind and plunged her into emptiness. Chapter 2. Elith emerged in fragmented consciousness. Her first awareness was that of the sterile, thin scent of cycled air. Next, she noticed gravity too was subtly different, thin in the same way the air was. It was several seconds before those sensations connected to any sense of meaning. When they did, she realized she was no longer on a planet, but rather on a ship. The pain followed soon after, dull but full and wide, strongly contrasted against the thinness of everything else. Her entire body felt drained of all but a deep, pulsing ache. She dared not open her eyes. That didn't prevent the person by her side from noticing she had awakened. "Elith," a woman said, warm, kind, a soothing voice speaking from her previous life, her first life. "Nieda." In the haze, it took a few moments for the echo of the past to reform into the call of the present, for the voice that had once been loved to transform into one to be hated and perhaps feared. "Elith," Nieda said again, and though the tone was the same, it struck Elith now like cold steel. She refused to open her eyes. "I know you can hear me," Nieda said. "Does it mean nothing to you that I would violate my oath by speaking your name. As Elith's consciousness returned fully, the memories reorganized and clarified, and she saw once more in her mind's eye Nieta standing before her in black and crimson armor. Elith didn't want to acknowledge the woman, but the words came anyway. "What oath of yours could possibly remain intact," she said, "now that you bear the Hezra colors?" Nieta made a sound somewhere between disgust and a chuckle without humor. "I can forgive the accusation, exile, despite the arrogance, but in this room, there is only one traitor to the house." Elith allowed her eyes to open then, but did not turn to face the woman by her side. There was scant light in the chamber, yet it seemed to bore directly into the back of Elith's brain. In her brief glimpse, she judged the size and furnishings of the space. Tight quarters, even for a ship. She closed her eyes again, against the assault of meager light, as the rest of the image formed in her mind. Not quarters. A cell. "The nerve agent will take time to leave your system," Nieta said. "You're fortunate they didn't kill you." "I don't feel fortunate." "Then you still haven't fully grasped your position in the world." Elith drew a long breath, pushed back against the wall of pain that invited her to remain silent. The thin cot she lay upon felt more like a stretcher than anything one was meant to sleep on. Its surface seemed designed only to aggravate the tension in her muscles. "I had a place," she said. "You took me from it." "With good cause. Each day of your exile, the threat you pose to the Ascendants grows." "If I posed a threat to the Empire, I would have chosen a different path," Elith answered, anger slipping through. Nieta could not fathom what power Elith had turned away from, and how costly it had been for her to do so. At the time, Elith herself had scarcely understood the toll her choice would take. "All I want is to be left alone." "An impossibility, I fear." Elith tested her eyes against the light once more, and this time found the discomfort bearable. Still, she kept her gaze on the ceiling. "I've done nothing to warrant First House's concern, but you must know that already. If I'd been doing anything dangerous, the Paragon would have seen it."
"Perhaps. We couldn't be sure."
"You'd have me believe that you still serve the House, then?"
"Believe whatever you like," Nieta said, "but I remain an advocate of the Voice and servant of the First House, as you once were. My duty is to serve alongside the Hezra, for a time." The thought that Nieta was a traitor had been difficult to accept, but it had presented itself as more likely than the claim she was making now. "An alliance?" Elith said, "because you feared what I might become?"
"No, exile," Nieta said, "because we fear what you already are."
The silence lay heavy upon Elith as Nieta gave her words time to fill the space of the room. There was a rich economy to the statement, an implied proclamation of judgment that followed behind. The First House hadn't merely withdrawn their protection from Elith. They were actively partnered with the Hezra in this, in hunting her down.
"And," Nieta added a moment later, "because we need your help."
Elith looked at Nieta for the first time. The woman was dressed now, not in the black and crimson of the Hezra, but in the simple gray of her house. And in her tearful eyes, Elith saw the great distance between them. How deeply betrayed she felt, mingled with fear, and the genuine love she somehow still clung to, or that clung to her, perhaps. It was the depth of that love that had made it possible to wound her so completely. Despite the circumstances, Nieta was glad to see her, and terrified.
"What help could you possibly need from an exile,
and high enemy of the Ascendants? Elith asked.
When you're strong enough, we'll show you. Though it seemed to set every nerve in her body ablaze, Elith forced herself to sit up and then struggled to her feet.
Nieta smiled in spite of herself.
Perhaps you haven't changed as much as I'd thought, she said.
She stood as well and stepped to the hatch.
I have no doubt your will is sufficient, but your mind needs rest. At least another hour to ensure the toxin is cleared.
I'll return for you.
Someone outside must have been observing the entire event, because as Nieta was turning toward the door, it chirped and unlocked and then slid open. 4 Hezra troopers stood guard in the corridor. Elith remained standing by her cot after the door closed, defying the cry of her muscles to give in, to lie down, to return to the temporary oblivion of sleep. An aching fog seemed to envelop and penetrate every aspect of her mind and body. Gradually, as she confronted the pain that clung to her very being, she felt the edges of it begin to recede. Though she was no longer a daughter of the first house of the Ascendants, Elith had not abandoned its many useful ways. She forced her body into the moving meditation that she'd first learned as a young girl, taking each pose in turn, extending the time for each as long as she could bear. Silence unveils the heavens. Arrow seeks the heart. Warrior summits the mountain. Watcher greets the storm. Titan bears the world. Oriole releases the dove. Servant awaits with gratitude. With each transition, she mastered a little more of herself, and by the end of the sequence, though the pain had not fully ceased, it had quieted enough for her to focus on other things. Not that there was much to focus on in her tiny cell, and the brief glimpse she'd had of the corridor and the guards beyond had only confirmed the obvious. They were keeping her in a proper brig rather than an improvised holding cell. And thus she was on a military vessel. All that really told her was that this was a Hezra-run operation, supported by the house and not the other way around. As her mind became clearer, one detail emerged that should have struck her immediately as strange. They had not restrained her in any way. Once, when she still served the house long ago, she had been captured by the Hezra, and they had fit her with a device that prevented her speech. They certainly feared what she was capable of. Nieta had taken pains to make that much clear. There was no mere prison that could hold an advocate of the voice for long if she desired freedom. The fact that they'd done nothing to prevent her from wielding the power of the deep language could not have been a careless oversight. Shortly after she'd completed the sequence, the door to her cell slid open. Nieta stood in the corridor alongside a tall, thin man and flanked by a 4-man armed escort. Nieta stepped inside first, followed by the tall man who had to duck his head to enter. He was perhaps 6.5 feet tall and had the look of an endurance athlete, slender but broad-shouldered and clearly fit. And his uniform told Elith all she needed to know. It was a crisp black, trimmed with subdued crimson elements and a single, understated Hezra emblem on the high collar. He was an envoy, an emissary of the supreme authority of the Hezra Ka. The escort remained outside, and no one spoke until the door had closed and locked once more.
"Is this the tiny thing that has caused us so much trouble?" the man said, smiling down at Elith.
He was easily a foot taller than her, and his forceful presence magnified the difference.
"They tell me I shouldn't speak your name. What do you think of that?"
"I don't think of it," Elith replied.
"I don't much either," he said. "But your former siblings are a touchy bunch. I suppose I shouldn't upset them without some cause." My name is Sardis. You know who I represent.
He stated it plainly, but waited for acknowledgement nonetheless.
Elith gave a curt nod. Good. Then you understand the severity of your situation. I've been told you're smart, so I won't expound too thoroughly. Suffice it to say that if at any point I become concerned that you pose a threat to anyone on this ship, from captain to cook, I will have you separated down to your base atoms and distributed into space, and no one will even bother to ask why.
He said it all with the same smile, somehow neither genuine nor condescending. It looked like an expression he'd seen other people use, but didn't understand the function of.
I am but your humble servant, Elith said, with a mock bow. Ah, that it would be true, he replied. Perhaps in time. First a conversation, before you make such promises.
He made a signal with his hand, and the door opened behind him.
This way, he said, exiting.
Elith glanced at Nieta, who held out a hand, inviting her to leave first. As Elith stepped by her, Nieta leaned forward.
I hate that man, she whispered.
Elith stepped out of the cell and followed Sardis through the ship, with the guards forming a tight knot around her and Nieta behind. After an elevator ride and a brief walk, the envoy led her to a cabin on one of the uppermost decks. An additional pair of sentries stood at attention by the hatch, but it was significant to Elith that when Sardis led Nieta and her inside, neither the guards nor the escort followed them into the cabin. Once inside, Elith saw that the cabin had been converted into a workspace of sorts, though judging from the scattered material and number of floating holographic displays, it had either been done hastily or by someone with zero sense of organization. A moment later, the answer clearly emerged as the second, when a man suddenly stood up from behind a makeshift desk.
Hello, sorry, the man said. Sorry, a quick nap helps clear the mind, for me anyway.
He was a short, stocky man, with golden brown skin and a mass of white hair that seemed more like a hat than anything naturally grown. On first impression, Elith had no idea what to make of him. He had a broad face, rounded, with prominent cheekbones, and his stark white hair was at odds with his otherwise youthful look. And though the hair would have been perfectly at home, sitting on the head of any proctor of mathematics, his frame was that of a military man, used to hard physical labor. His jumble of physical characteristics defied any educated guess at his age. But his appearance seemed more or less in line with the state of his improvised office, a sort of loose collection that shared a single purpose, even if that purpose wasn't exactly apparent.
Envoy, he said, by way of greeting.
Arbiter, the envoy replied. The arbiter smiled placidly at Elith and Nieta, apparently waiting for the envoy to introduce them. After a few awkward moments of silence, the arbiter finally took it upon himself to do so.
Arbiter Oyun, the man said to Nieta, and then again to Elith, offering a courteous bow each time.
Elith returned the bow, but neither she nor Nieta returned the offer of a name, and Oyun didn't seem to expect one.
Sardis addressed Elith. We are going to share some information with you that is not widely known. It's important that it remains so, but it's necessary for you to know it, so do please pay attention.
He motioned to Oyun.
Arbiter, Sardis repeated. If you would, please.
Certainly, of course, delighted.
He turned immediately and rummaged among the floating displays hovering over his desk, sliding several into an overlapping pile in apparent search for a specific one.
Ah, here we are.
He pulled the display closer and expanded it, angled it so the others could see it, a professor preparing to deliver a lecture. It was a small audience. The envoy, Nieta, Elith,
and both the envoy and Nieta seemed more interested in watching Elith's reaction than in anything Oyun had to say.
"Are you familiar with this world, Advocate?"
"Arbiter,"
Nieta said sharply. Oyun reacted with surprise, at first not realizing what he'd said that triggered the harsh response. But then it occurred to him.
"Oh, yes, my apologies," he said. "Are you familiar with this world? Must I call her Exile? We didn't exile her."
"We ask that you not honor her with the title she herself renounced," Nieta answered.
"I've never been much of one for formalities," Oyun said. "I have a hard time keeping all the rules of etiquette in mind, but very well."
He addressed Elith intentionally once more.
"Are you familiar with this world, dear?"
Elith looked at the display, scanned the few details, then shook her head.
"I'm not sure if that's a relief or not," he said. "This is Ruhet, 1117. Technically speaking, back at the lab, we've just taken to calling it Quell's Shadow. It's a strange planet, very curious. About 5 months ago, it showed up roughly 10 light seconds from Quell."
"Showed up?" Elith asked. The Ascendant's empire spanned the entire galaxy and had long ago cataloged every planet within its borders. The idea that they had somehow missed one was absurd. He nodded.
"Fully formed, out of nowhere."
"I don't understand."
"Neither do we," Oyun said. "A few folks around the lab thought maybe you'd made it."
He smiled, but Elith couldn't tell if he was joking or not. Oyun didn't seem to be sure either.
"I'm not sure what you mean."
Oyun nodded again.
"In most regards, the planet is quite indistinguishable from any other habitable Ascendant's world. Stable atmosphere, plenty of liquid water, carbon-rich. A bit on the smaller side, maybe half the size of Quell or so. But if we wanted to settle it, we wouldn't even have to terraform it. Quite the gift, really. A whole new planet, from nothing. The only thing I don't like about it is, of course, that it shouldn't be there. And I mean beyond the obvious weirdness of, poof, new planet. Specifically, I mean there's no disruption of the neighboring worlds. No orbital disturbance. No gravitational signature. If you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't be able to tell, really, except from the light bouncing off it. And there's not much of that. Even the worlds nearby don't seem to notice it. And then, even more strangely, it's tracking Quell's orbit. Not orbiting Quell, mind you, just trailing along behind it. Hence, Quell's shadow."
Elith couldn't make sense of what Oyun was telling her, or why, for that matter. But a deep dread was beginning to form in her bones that here at last was the unforeseen outcome of Eth Amuin's work on Quell. Something birthed from his thoughtless exploitation of the deep language, the unintended consequence of his twisting of the fabric of reality. And, if she were being honest, wrought with her help.
"I'm looking forward to seeing what you can tell us about it," Oyun said. "We hadn't gotten that far yet, Arbiter," Sardis said. "Oh, well, do you want to tell her or should I?"
Sardis sighed mildly, and Elith got the sense that he'd given the Arbiter strict instructions, none of which had been followed. She also started to suspect that Oyun knew exactly what he was doing and was enjoying it.
"You might as well continue," the envoy said, "since you've already started." "Certainly," he turned back to address Elith again. "We've learned everything about the world that we can from a distance, which, as you can see, hasn't been much. So we're sending an expedition to investigate. I was hoping you would join it."
Elith looked to Nieta, then to Sardis. They were both still watching her intently.
"You make it sound as though I have a choice in the matter," she said.
"You do," Sardis answered. "I'm sure it's more than you deserve, but in this matter it truly is left to you to volunteer. We're looking to solve a puzzle, and we believe you may have some of the key skills and knowledge that we're missing. It would do us no good if you were to spend all your energy looking for every opportunity to escape.
The suggestion seemed preposterous on its face.
There was no way they were offering her a genuine choice.
You want me to travel to this world, to investigate it on your behalf? And then what?
If we're successful and satisfied with your aid, Sardis said, we're prepared to commute the standing order and grant you regular citizenship. Assuming you live the quiet life you claim to want, we won't see each other again.
For someone in Elith's position, the offer of reinstatement as a proper Ascendant's citizen was a high reward indeed. But she didn't understand why they'd spent so much effort to bring her in, or why they would make her such an offer. The Hezra already had entire armies of scientists and technicians. They didn't need her help to understand the planet. There was one skill that she possessed that might make her particularly valuable. She was an assassin of worlds, or had been once, but that too did not make her unique. The house had others of her former order who could have carried out such a mission.
And what, precisely, do you mean by successful? Elith asked.
Survival would be a good start, Oyun offered. Beyond that, well, practically anything you learn would be more than we know right now. I have a running list of questions around here somewhere.
We could define a few more concrete goals if you prefer, Sardis said, cutting in before Oyun could say more.
To make sure all parties agree on the outcome. I understand you may find it difficult to trust our intentions in this, but it is the Hezra Ka's directive that you be offered the choice.
Elith looked to Nieta. The older woman nodded. The house had assented. If Elith accepted and performed her duties well, she would receive full, proper Ascendant's citizenship. No more running, no more hiding, no more living hunted. She could live openly, travel freely. It seemed too clean, too easy.
And if I decline? She asked.
We drop you off on a world of your choosing, no hard feelings, the envoy said, and we give you a standard day's head start as a courtesy.
He flashed his emotionless smile.
And I assume continue to track me the entire time.
We won't, Sardis replied. We're a special detachment. In this matter, the Hezra is especially compartmentalized. We would not be able to communicate your whereabouts because we cannot communicate our whereabouts, nor our contact with you.
I find it hard to believe that the Hezra would go to such lengths to find me, only to release me again based on my personal whims.
I don't care if you believe me or not, Exile. Logistical matters aside, you have the assurance of the Hezra Ka himself that you are to be released unharmed, if that is your choice.
My word is the word of the Hezra Ka.
The last phrase struck Elith with its intended forcefulness. An envoy who falsely claimed to speak the word of the Hezra Ka could be put to death for the violation.
Personally, it makes no difference to me, he added. I'd be delighted for you to return to being someone else's problem. I strongly advised against this whole direction anyway.
Elith scanned the faces of the three others in the room. Sardis showed no signs of deception, despite his earlier threat to separate her into her atomic components. He truly did seem to want nothing more than to get her off his ship and out of his way. She wondered how long he'd have to search for her, just to deliver his message. Oyun, on the other hand, had a warm, lively expression, as though this was all exciting and enjoyable. He clearly wanted Elith's help in this strange matter. Nieta's face would have been unreadable to an outsider. But as her once sister-in-arms, Elith saw the subtleties of her conflicting emotions. She was torn, ashamed of being forced to seek the help of an exile, but anxious for the aid nonetheless. Elith looked at the display hovering nearby, showing this planetary enigma. Quell's shadow, a mystery to be solved in exchange for a fresh, new life,
a life extended to her by the gracious hand of the Hezra Ka. And beyond the Hezra, she saw too the paragon of the first house, her former sovereign, the Hezra Ka's mirror image. They stood as the twin powers animating the ascendance's authority, long at odds and now, it seemed, joined in purpose. But Elith knew all too well the cunning and subtle designs of the paragon, the many-layered intrigues she spun for her own intentions. Whatever threat this new world might pose, whatever alliance it appeared to have forged between the two arms of ascendance might, Elith knew that it must all be merely one facet of the paragon's secret purpose. And hers was an authority to which Elith would never again submit. She turned back to Sardis.
"I think I'll take my chances," Elith answered.
"Just as I anticipated," Sardis said, irritated, but clearly not surprised. "I advised them that this would all be a waste of time and resources, but I suppose at very least you've given me the pleasure of being right. Perhaps next time others will be more willing to listen to me."
His response surprised her. She'd expected him to give her an ominous warning or explicit threat to make at least one attempt to bend her will. But after his response, he stooped down and picked something up off the floor from beneath Oyun's workstation and held it out to her. Her pack, all the belongings she had left now. Nieta stepped forward, a half step ahead of the envoy.
"Consider carefully," she said. "Think of the lengths we've gone to. Think of all we're offering and what it must mean." In Nieta's words, Elith sensed a desperation deeper than the woman's expression had revealed. But even now, Elith could perceive how the paragon would use this to draw her back once more under the house's control. For all her power and cunning, the paragon never bore the risk of her designs, instead always working through others, ordering their steps, manipulating them into carrying out her will while concealing her true intent and shielding herself from its consequences.
"I made my decision years ago, Nieta," Elith answered, taking her pack from Sardis.
"Very well," Sardis said. "I'm sure I don't need to impress upon you the importance of not speaking what you've learned here. It would make you particularly easy to find. We'll make arrangements for your travel."
Elith glanced once more at the image of Ruhet 1117. Though they called it Quell's Shadow, she couldn't help but see it as Eth Amuin's work. Some unforeseen consequence of his long effort to unravel the full power of the deep language, and the result of the Hezra's secret project. This was more their doing than hers, and she had already played her part. She would leave it to someone else to rise up and meet whatever challenge this little world posed. Sardis opened the door and stood next to it, waiting for Elith to exit.
"Sorry to see you go," Oyun said sincerely. "I was really hoping to work with you on this. I think you have a lot to offer."
"I wish you all success, Arbiter," Elith answered. "May you ever ascend."
"May we all," he replied.
Nieta remained standing by his side, unwilling now to meet Elith's gaze.
"It was good to see you again, Nieta," Elith said, truthfully. Though she had no desire to return to the house, she couldn't deny how much she missed her sisters.
The other made no reply, didn't raise her head. Elith looked on her for what would be the last time, savoring the moment even in all its brokenness. In her exile, she'd never expected to see anyone from the house again. And though the circumstances were strained and confounding, she counted this final chance to be in her once beloved sister's presence a gift.
"Goodbye."
Elith turned to follow Sardis out, but before she took a step, she said, "You know, Envoy, if this matter is truly so important, you should talk to the Paragon herself. She's really the one you should be sending." The man gestured for her to exit first, but as she began to move, Nieta spoke from behind.
"We did," Nieta said. The words caught Elith, prevented her from crossing the threshold.
"Advocate!"
Sardis snapped. Elith half-turned, saw Nieta looking at her now, and saw the truth on her face. Despite the envoy's warning, Nieta continued, "We did send the Paragon, Elith. She didn't come back."